Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Bores and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. And if you hear some light drilling, that is the office slowly being brought to life after some flooding. Now, James, when it comes to the action in the Commons today, we have heard about the government's winter plan. This is how the government plans to tackle COVID, and there's a plan A and there's a plan B. Can you talk us through what Sajid Javid laid out today?
Yeah, so the key element of plan A is what the JCVI announced today, which is they are now recommending a booster shot for everyone over 50. The government hopes that this will deal with the issue of waning immunity. The JCVI has also approved both the flu jab and the booster shot being given in the same appointment, which the government hope will boost uptake of the flu vaccine. And amid a lot of concern in government about how bad this winter's flu season could be. They'll continue contact tracing for COVID cases. I mean, obviously, you're not legally required to isolate now, but it is recommended that if you are told you've been in contact with someone, you go and get a test yourself. And there'll continue to be financial support for people who have to self-isolate, who are eligible for it. So that is plan A, which is really quite light touch. Then there is plan B. Now, I think what's striking me about plan B is that plan B itself is also quite light touch. It is essentially COVID status certification, aka vaccine passports, and compulsory face masks in certain settings, and they would consider working from home guidance if necessary. And I think that the fact that plan B is so relatively mild reflects the kind of confidence in government, and confidence with COVID is often found to be misplaced. But at the moment, there is a confidence in government that the level of vaccination in the population is so high that even if things got to a worrying point, it would only take a relatively slight tap on the brakes to correct that. I think one of the interesting things about Plan B is how much emphasis it puts on telling people the situation is bad. I think one of the things that government and officials have been struck by, which they didn't think would happen, and which our own Philip Thomas has been pointing out on, is how self-regulating people's behaviour has been. When COVID cases are high, people cut right back on their social contacts. And that does seem to be continuing to be the case, even with these changes to the isolation rules. So rising COVID cases leads to people reducing the amount of contacts they have. Just look at how there were fewer journeys made on the London public transport system the week after all the restrictions went than there were the week before, because you know that was a time when people were very worried about the number of cases.
We're now going to bring special guest Fraser Nelson.
Listening to James, a couple of things jump out at me. I mean, school closures, James, aren't mentioned. They're not interesting. When they say work from home guidance, we're not saying work from home mandates. We're not saying we're going to, in other words, they're pretty much saying, not quite, but we would not do another lockdown. And the point about information, basically, if you look at the lessons from around the world in lockdown, one of those lessons was that lockdowns weren't actually that much more effective than what people were doing voluntarily. And to me, the lack of lockdown, the lack of diktats in the new toolkit is recognition that they went a bit too far last time, and that there's a hell of a lot of power in voluntary behaviour. We know that before the last lockdown, Brits had actually were staying at home to a huge degree, far more than Swedes. And Swedes, from their voluntary behaviour, they stayed at home a lot, but not nearly as much as we were doing voluntarily. It also raises the question, had we not locked down, would it have been that much different? I don't think that it would have been.
Isabel, how are the plans landing with Tory MPs? As James set out, it doesn't feel so drastic in terms of what Plan B is. So was there any sign of anguish?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot for them to get annoyed about, I think, lots of different aspects. And from the sort of COVID recovery group perspective, they are agitated about the fact that the government could impose a lockdown at very short notice. They're agitated about the fact that the government could impose vaccine passports at short notice, along with mandated mask wearing or an instruction to or guidance to work from home, because they are very suspicious of a government that keeps these powers in reserve just in case. And they feel like they're being marched up and down the hill on vaccine passports to a certain extent as well. So there was some, I think I'd probably characterise it as grumpiness in the Commons just now when Sajid Javid gave his statement, rather than fury or outrage. We may get some of that to come. There's also, on the other side, some real disquiet from MPs, particularly on the opposition benches, about the booster programme, because they are concerned about the morality, actually, of offering boosters to people who this year have already had two shots, when the rest of the world, you know, a lot of low-income countries, people have not had one jab at all. And their argument is, well, look, you know, there's a moral issue here, but also there's a practical issue, which is that we are basically allowing, in one way or the other, new variants to start to develop in these other countries, which will then come to the UK and make living in a normal way even more of a distant prospect. So that there's that argument. The Lib Dems, in their responses, were obviously pushing quite hard on vaccine passports, because that's the thing that they've decided that they're going to campaign on as a party. So there's a sort of panoply of different concerns here. And in a sense, the number of different things in this toolbox means there's not one thing for anger to be concentrated on at the moment.
Fraser, I'm going to try and bring in our special guest once again. On vaccine passports, Fraser, I wonder what you make of this, because we heard today that ministers will give businesses just 1 week's notice before implementing mandatory vaccine passports. That would then be required for gigs, concerts, festivals, conferences, football stadiums. But yet, on Sunday, you almost had Sajid Javid touring the TV studios with this good news announcement pitched to his party that vaccine passports had been scrapped. Is the government trying to have it two ways?
Well, in Sajid Javid's defence, he did say that they would have it as a backup option. But you can tell there was huge disagreements in government about this. I mean, Sajid Javid almost admitted that himself when he told Andrew Marr that even government sometimes loses sight of how draconian it has become. It's got so used to having these powers. And it's, so he basically was almost nodding to that. And but they struggle to get it past the Commons unless they renew the emergency powers. They're still wanting to do that. I mean, the reason the U-turn on vaccine passports happened, in my opinion, was because the government worked out just how many Tory MPs, already infuriated by the tax rise on the poor, would probably have vetoed it. And I think that they might struggle to do it next time, unless they manage to bypass Parliament somehow. Even on booster jabs, they're quite lucky. There is some Public Health England data earlier today, and they were showing that when it comes to hospitalisations, there is no real reduction in efficacy. You're as protected against serious illness from COVID 20 weeks down the line. And this is what the WHO is saying as well, that there is a finite world supply of vaccines. So if you are giving these vaccines to the already immune, who are already 90% protected against serious illness, then that is a bit decadent, given that there are people who are dying for the want of a vaccine. The same moral argument applies to giving vaccines to those who've had COVID and are already immune. So I think there are several arguments ahead of the government. It announces Plan B as if it would definitely get away with it, but I don't think they would. I mean, the other point against vaccine passports is there isn't that much evidence that they actually work, that they make much of a difference. And I think the government, for once, would probably have to prove its case if it were to seek and get parliamentary permission.
And James, we know that if the government tries to bring back vaccine passports, they will need a vote as according to what's currently been set out. But I think more broadly speaking, we've spoken about Plan A, Plan B. Plan B, not as drastic as some of these warnings in terms of reports recently about firebreakers or potential lockdown and things go wrong. So is there a Plan C?
Well, one would imagine that somewhere in Whitehall, if not written down on paper, there is essentially a Plan C. You saw Sajid Javid in the statement just now, as well as just raising this issue too, which is what happens if you get a variant that escapes the vaccine far more than any of the variants we have seen to date do? That essentially would be almost a new pathogen. What would you do? How would you respond to that? So I am sure that there are thoughts there on what to do. I think the big question, which we don't yet know, is, you know, schools in England have been back now for a decent amount of time. And for the first time, I think you can begin to say that at this similar point after Scottish schools went back, you were beginning to see the Scottish spike that you had on schools return. And that does not famous last words, that does not yet appear to be happening in England, which is the encouraging news for the winter. I think the most worrying thing about the winter is flu and the way in which flu could combine the relatively low number of COVID patients in hospital to put real pressure on the NHS. You know, that usually annual phenomenon of the NHS winter crisis is caused essentially by a 100% increase in the number of people being admitted with respiratory infections. If that number was higher than 100% this year, because of a lack of both natural immunity and the theory that we've discussed on this podcast before, but the flu shot this year isn't likely to be as well targeted as you would like it to be, then I think that is where things could become most dangerous for the government. But I think politically and economically, the government will do everything it can to avoid anything that could be described as a lockdown.
And finally, Isabel, we've heard about one of the measures in the Plan B is changing the guidance on face masks. So you are supposed to wear in crowded spaces. Do you think that's going to be a hard sell if the government does try and do that? Because we have a situation where in Scotland, where the face mask rules are currently stricter, the case rates are much higher. So I wonder with some of these measures if Boris Johnson will be able to convince his own MPs they're going to do what they're intended to do.
Yeah, I think you've got a situation as well at the moment where Conservative MPs are even less likely than the general population to be wearing face masks, even though they are requested, I think, is the formal term in the House of Commons. So they're not required, but MPs have been asked to consider other House of Commons staff, and generally Tory MPs are not wearing masks. It's interesting, actually, this morning, I'm in Scotland at the moment, and on the school run this morning, even in the playground outside, where masks are not mandatory or indeed particularly effective, all the parents were wearing masks. So I think they have become a sort of a psychological thing, actually, that people feel that it shows they're taking COVID seriously and to a certain extent helps people feel as though they are protecting themselves as well. So I wonder whether, actually, as Fraser said earlier in this podcast, we might get the public voluntarily readopting a lot of these measures as cases rise and as sort of public consciousness of the impact on the NHS begins to rise again. Because I think at the moment, a lot of people feel as though COVID has gone away, certainly in England. And that was something that Chris Whitty was trying to warn about yesterday afternoon, when he was giving his press conference on the vaccination decision. It's something that Jonathan Van Tam has been warning about today in relation to England and the impact on the NHS, that it's going to be a very bumpy winter and that COVID has by no means gone away. I think the fear amongst those medical advisers is that a lot of members of the public at the moment think that COVID is in retreat, whereas they feel that it's just on the horizon coming back.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, James. And thank you, Fraser.